We believe Bo's an excellent hockey player that can help our team win. You know, I've maintained the same position that if there's a deal out there that makes sense for us that we think is going to improve our roster, we're open to it. But if there's not, you know, we're not in a situation where we're looking to move him out or looking to move him for futures and stuff like that. It's just for me, we want to help our team win hockey games, and he does that.
It's Kevin Adams on Bo Byram from earlier. Byram, of course, gets a 2-year contract extension with the Sabres. I'm going to chat about it with Chad DeDominicis, Expected Buffalo podcast and founder of Expected Buffalo, deep Sabres analysis. And, you know, as we track this whole thing with Byram, we'll see if the Sabres can make it work, if, in fact, he is going to stay for those 2 years, though. I guess the total of the 2 years. So joining us on the Western Hotline is Chad DeDominicis on this Thursday morning. Chad, good morning. Thanks for taking some time today. Were you shocked? I mean, if we can go back to the start of the offseason, do you end up shocked that Byram is still here and now has a 2-year extension?
Yeah, I think if you go back to like April, probably. I mean, as it went along throughout the summer, no, but definitely if I went back to where it was in April, I thought it was a foregone conclusion that he was going, but I guess, you know, the Pachurka thing changed and couldn't find something they like, and here he is for 2 more years.
Do you think the Sabres were more willing or more eager to trade Byram, but the Pachurka deal was the one that ultimately came to fruition, so that's the one they did?
I think so, because I think they ultimately got what they wanted in the Pachurka deal, too, and that's the right shot defenseman. I don't think they were going to get significant value in that type of player back using Byram. And they said, and you know, a lot of the insiders said, like, they really wanted to keep Pachurka. So I think once that whole situation started to unfold and then the Utah, you know, option with Kesterling, you know, presented itself, they, you know, decided to that's the path they're going to go. And then they were so open to moving Byram for something else. But, you know, it wasn't really out there. It wasn't, you know, what they expected, which I'm a little bit surprised. But at the same time, maybe I'm not surprised. You know, teams are, I don't want to say smarter these days, but they have, you know, everybody has numbers now. So everybody kind of sees all the same things that, you know, you hope people don't realize that he's more a little bit of a Darlene merchant, but, you know, teams notice those things too.
You refer to him as a Darlene merchant. For Byram, let's get into it. So what does he do well? How can they use him well? And is having him be a Darlene partner maybe not a long-term idea? You don't want to do that for, you know, a 7-year, $70 million contract, but he's making, you know, NHL top four defenseman money. So can he sit with Darlene for the year, and can the Sabres be better as a result of that?
Yeah, I think so. I think if they're going to put him with Darlene, that's going to be a really good pair. Their numbers last year, you know, were fantastic. Among the tops of the leagues as a pair, they were above 50% shot share, above 50% expected goals. I think, like, their goal differential was 70%. I mean, if you're getting those numbers out of your top pair, that's great. That's excellent. And, you know, that was the thing with the Byram. It was never an issue when he was playing with Darlene. That worked quite well. They, you know, they meshed pretty good together. They flowed off each other. So that was never the concern. If they're just going to do that, that's perfectly fine and acceptable. It's the problem becomes if other pairings that you're hoping work don't, because then you might have to pull Byram off of that Darlene pair. And we've seen in Buffalo that he doesn't really work with anybody else. We saw in Colorado, they couldn't really find a partner for him really either that worked consistently. So he's not somebody who really can drive their own pairings, but I mean, he has his upside. He moves the puck well, he skates well. I think there's some upside offensively, maybe not as high as some people think, and he can get by defensively. It's just that, you know, you need to put him with a decent partner, because it just, we've seen it throughout his career. And it's just, it is what it is. Some guys just can't do it. He just can't really drive his own pairing.
Chad DeDominicis is joining us on the Western Hotline. Chad of Expected Buffalo. Does Byram fit the offseason? Because they want to be tougher to play against, right? I mean, they've talked about a certain style that they want to be. They've talked about that a lot. Maybe it is just lip service, because each and every season it seems like they're kind of talking about that. You know, is he fit? And I guess, like, I don't know. The whole thing, I think what Sabres fans struggle with, Chad, is that keeping him for a year or two more seems like it's just, well, plan B, or maybe even plan C, because this is a player that they were actively maybe hoping to move, and all the reports about it being a softer market than they had expected means that they did not pull the trigger, which is something that Kevin Adams has probably criticized for a lot, that he does not pull the trigger. Is it fine, or should it be viewed as disappointing in the context of this offseason and what they're trying to accomplish?
Well, that's a good question. I think there's, you can go on both sides of it. Does he fit the hard to play against part? No. I mean, he's not a physical player, make it more difficult to play against. Is it fine in the sense of a two-year contract and what he's making and how they're going to utilize him? Yeah, I mean, that's not going to kill you. It's going to be easier to move. You know, the way they're going to use him, he's a fine player. Probably one of the better partners that Dahlin has had throughout his time in Buffalo. You know, that's not really saying a lot, but still, you know, I think by a considerable amount, he's one of the best partners he's had. But I think, yeah, when you then separate it from that, the overall disappointment of, it seems like the thing we say every year. You're one move short every time. Like, if you just got that one more thing that you needed, you would probably be in a good shape. And that was my feeling on the Paterka thing. While it feels like a light return, I can live with it if you would have got the next move to, I don't even need you to go out and replace him with a 28-goal, 70-point forward. Give me a middle six forward that is decent, that can play two-way hockey, and, you know, I can buy into what you're doing. But now you're going to try to tell me, well, Jack Quinn and, you know, Jason Zucker can just step into the Paterka spot. And I was like, I don't know. I guess we're going to find out. But every year it's hope. It's hope this guy does it. Hope that guy does it. And it's going to be year three of that. And maybe this time it works, or maybe it'll be the same as the last 2 years.
Is there maybe possibly still some hope that they would trade Samuelson? Because, you know, if the market's soft on Byram, I don't know what teams are going to think of Samuelson, who does not bring the offensive upside, really. And his own team, I don't know what they think of him. That people have seen him on the ice, what he does. They gave him a big, long contract extension because at the start of his career, he looked like a defensive stalwart, and that's not really played out the way they thought. So what do you make of Samuelson? Is it just run it back?
I would assume so at this point. There's just not a lot of talk out there that involved him really at all the entire offseason. I just think that there's people in that front office that still like him and believe what he can be. Now, the good news is that, in theory, the way this team is put on paper, he is going to be a third pair defenseman instead of playing top minutes with Dahlin. And maybe in that scenario, he can, you know, be fine, play with Connor Timmins as long as he can stay healthy. You know, and it could be a decent third pair for you. He doesn't play enough minutes to hurt you. And you kind of just get by for at least one more season. But, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't anticipate. I mean, I honestly think they're done. Unless they grab a nice, you know, cheap free agent here at the end, you know, I would say this is your roster as you have it.
Yeah. Which, I don't know, is that pretty uninspiring? What's the letter grade on the offseason? The Paterka trade that they're kind of bullied into a little bit? They get Kesselring, which is something that they wanted, okay, and Josh Stone. But that's the move, and Alex Lyon is your new, you know, Reimer replacement. I feel like Sabres fans are probably tired of hearing the same old thing, but it seems like an offseason that really didn't get much done.
Yeah, my thing that I'm kind of rolling with is I think that they're a better team right now overall than they were when the season ended last year. But it's the degree of better. They missed the playoffs by 12 points. I think maybe they added 4 to 5 points. Clearly not enough to get where you need to go to be a playoff team. You know, I like Kesselring. He was a guy I talked about a lot in the offseason. That's a good move. I think that'll help you. I've watched a lot of Josh Stone games. I've done a lot of digging on him. I think he's actually going to be a pretty sneaky, impressive addition. But again, that's not going to get you all the way. And really, it just, like I said, it's hope. You got to hope Josh Norris stays healthy. You got to hope Jack Quinn bounces back. You got to hope Luukkonen makes saves. And it just goes on. I mean, the list can go 5, 6, 7 deep, you know, of hope things. And sure, if you get all of those things to go right, yeah, you can maybe beat what Montreal was last year and surprise some people and be in the playoffs. But still, it's so much that has to go right. And you're banking on young players. You're going to have a 21-year-old as your top six center. You're going to have a 20-year-old probably be a top six left winger. It's for a team that's really saying that they want to be a playoff team, it's hard to believe that's what they're trying to strive for when all of those things, you know, you look at.
Chad DeDominicis, Expected Buffalo, the website, the podcast on the Sabres. Chad, thanks very much, and we'll check in down the line if anything, you know, ultimately does come of this. So, you know, good luck to the Sabres, I guess, you know.
We'll still have some fun, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Chad.
All right, thanks.
Chad DeDominicis, Expected Buffalo, a lot of numbers-based stuff, good in-depth analysis of the Sabres if you're a subscriber or you listen to the podcast. The schedule came out yesterday. The Sabres schedule came out yesterday. And, you know, I heard Paul Hamilton on with the afternoon guys. He'd said something to the effect of that the NHL wants to be a 7 o'clock league, 7 p.m. They want to be a 7 o'clock league. And looking at the schedule, that's a 7 o'clock league. The Sabres open their season at home against the Rangers Thursday at 7 o'clock. But what I'm looking at is weekends. You know, I am someone that has been a former season ticket holder of the Sabres. And, you know, this one thing I've learned in my old age, guys, huh? I'm old now. You guys think I'm old. 46. One thing I've learned in my old age is that there are 82 games, there are 41 at home, and there are lots of things that different people might want. When I was in my 20s and going to 35 games a year or 30 games a year, the opponent mattered. You know, it'd be a Friday night game that was cool. For a while, they did Friday at 8 p.m. starts, I think. There might have been a year the way they wear, you know, are they going to wear black and red? Is it a vibes kind of night where, oh, cool, primetime game, Friday night, wear the black and red, that's great. And in these last couple seasons, the most valuable games to me have become the afternoon games. We've got kids, whether I'm going with my wife or my family, my father-in-law, my brothers-in-law. The afternoon games, not only are they important to me, they are, again, like changing needs. It's about changing needs, changing desires, changing tastes. I used to be someone that complained about all the kids' day games and all the too many kids at the games, and it's the vibes aren't intense enough. You know, I want more of a raucous atmosphere. And then maybe it's just me and my own bias, but I think the most raucous games are the kids' games now, because the kids' games tend to be full, 1 o'clock on Saturday or Sunday. The afternoon games tend to be well attended, and kids like hockey, and going to these games has been fun, whether it's a kids' takeover game or if it's just the afternoon games. I just like a good afternoon game, and those are kind of gone this year, which is really disappointing. Of all the things, you know, the this probably isn't a Sabres issue. If Paul's right that the NHL wants to become a 7 o'clock league, the times of their home weekend games, I think I've got 3 afternoon games. Out of 41, 3? 1 o'clock on October 18th, Florida. 1 o'clock November 23rd, Carolina. That's a Sunday. I got a 5 o'clock against the Islanders in December. A 5:30 in March against Nashville, and one other afternoon game. Where'd it go? I lost it. 12:30 on Monday, October 13th. Weekend afternoon games that aren't holidays. 2 out of 41. Those are great games. Those are great atmospheres. I feel like I've been robbed by the NHL of the how many games will my kids go to this year? 2? It's tough. It's a tough ask. The NHL, why would they want to be a 7 o'clock league? I don't know if the Sabres can ask for more afternoon games, but, man, the number of late games on weekends, Bruins, Caps, Leafs, I've got a couple 5:30s. That's the best I can do. They're on the road a lot on the weekends in this schedule. They've got a ton of weekday games. So, I don't know. The whole thing to me, I think it's tough. I think it's if it's possible to have a tough schedule, I think you have a tough schedule. I don't mean from a standpoint of, you know, wins and losses. I mean growing your fan base. We want them to win games. Winning games is a way to grow your fan base. Having the games be available to you. You know, in football, we've got the blue and red scrimmage for the Bills. You can go to that, take kids to that. Take families to that. It's going to be a, you know, relatively cheap event. You got the Kids Day preseason game. That's a good one. Then the Bills schedule, like it is what it is. You're going to be put in prime time a lot. You're not going to get your Sunday 1 o'clocks because the team is so good, the country wants to see them. In the case of the Sabres, I know it might seem like I love to complain professionally, and sometimes that is true. In this case, it's just I'm legitimately bummed that the schedule does not have a lot of 1 o'clock. 4 o'clock. I got 5:30s. I got a couple 5:30s. I guess I got to deal with that. Fives and 5:30s. But 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, that window on Saturdays, especially once you get into February, March, and April, that is a window that I would want the NHL to be shooting for. And they're not.
We, I can tell you, you're not the only one that feels this way, because me and Bulldog last night were getting some dinner, and somebody just came up to us and mentioned this exact point.
Not enough afternoon games.
Like, what are you doing?
There's two.
You want to sell tickets, right? You got to get people in that building.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not going to start off great for them, I don't think, in terms of attendance. And that's a way to get, if you give parents an opportunity to bring their kids to games, they'll go to games. But if you're taking that away, it's just, you're shooting yourself in the foot.
I think it's tough.
Doesn't the NHL miss the mark with almost all of these decisions sometimes?
Yeah, it's not a league that has ever been, well, television contracts are exploding. So like that is what it is. And there's probably better television numbers at night. So why do they want to be a 7 o'clock league? So they can be a primetime broadcast league. And that might be it. For the longest time, we would say the NHL is a gate-driven league, by meaning that they make most of their money with ticket sales. And I guess with television contracts, whether that's TNT or Sportsnet in Canada and all the money they're making from that, they might want to have to shift more to, I guess, keep television partners happy. But for ticket sales in Buffalo, I think the Sabres, I don't know. I don't know if anybody down there would feel this way, if their ticket office would feel this way, that, man, this is going to hurt us. Because, again, they got a couple 5 o'clocks, and I wonder if that's a little bit of a here, fine. You could do 5:30. Saturday at 7. I mean, it's not too late for me to go or friends to go, but and those games, I feel like I'm not going to have them this year. I've got October 13th, October 18th, November 23rd, done. Yeah, that's it.
That's tough.
Those are my early games. By November 23rd,
you're done.
I've got a 4 o'clock against New Jersey on Black Friday. Okay. That's one more. Again, that's a holiday, though.
Right. That's a different thing. You're not given opportunities to families to go see the games in a comfortable sort of time window.
Unless they want 5 o'clock, which is better. It's better.
It's still.
But here we are by November 28th. They will not have a game before 4 p.m.
Right. You want to be able to go to the game, watch the whole game, and then go out to dinner with your kids after, right?
Yeah.
Or go walk in the park after or something. And that's gone for the 5 o'clock start.
Yeah, last year we had a thing with the kids where we take them out. There's the climbing gym down there. They do that. We do that in the morning, go get lunch, and then go to a Sabres game. And that was a full Saturday, and we're home by, 3 o'clock. Maybe by 3 o'clock. Maybe we left early. Maybe 4:30. So I'm not trying to make it so specific to me, but to only have two weekend 1 o'clock games, really, like that, I think it's tough. The other thing I noticed about the schedule for the Sabres here is they open at home against the Rangers. And we don't exactly do this with the Sabres the way we do with the Bills. The Bills drought, we can remember the most miserable games, right? If I called and said, like, give me a Bills drought memory, like, 6-3 against the Browns, or 56-10 against the Patriots. You remember low points during the drought. And in the Sabres drought, the opener this year reminded me of one of the low points of this drought. And that's because it was 2 years ago, right off the playoff year, when they missed the playoffs by 1 point. And Florida gets in, and that's Granato's year before his final season. We're feeling great about them. Levi shows up. Great vibes. Like, things were good. They open the next season, and it is a feeling of, okay, it's time. It's time to make the playoffs. Here we go. This team's going to be ready. They're young. They're on the rise. And they opened at home against the Rangers, because I remember I went to this game, of course, and the Rangers scored in the first period. It's 1-0, and the game was over. It was over.
I remember this.
It was
too.
Not only that they took a 1-0 lead, it was that they shut the Sabres out of the game. It was over, and a full house ready to pop off for a season opening game. What was the final score? Was it 5-0?
Yeah, it was a beatdown. I think 5-0 might be exactly what it was.
Yeah.
I remember Shesterkin played well at the start, and then the Sabres were dead. They couldn't beat them early, and that was it.
It was terrible.
It was terrible.
So, was it the low point? I don't know. It was one game in the season, but 5-1. Nope, that's not it. It's it was 5-1. 5-1, October 12th, 2023. 2 years ago, October 12, 2023. Let's go. Let's have a season. Boom, 5-1. All right. Well, thanks for coming, everybody. And, of course, that season ended up in disappointment. Granato got fired, and here we are. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 to join us. I have a Twitter poll up on looking back at Von Miller, and I'm excited to see the results. I mean, I've seen them. I'm very happy with where the results are trending. So I'll tell you what the question is about Von and whether or not the Bills learned a lesson here. That's what the question really is about. Have they learned a lesson? Do you want them to have learned a lesson on Von? That's the poll, and I like the answer that people are chiming in with. 803-0550, if you have a thought on that, to join us here on WGR.
Shedeur Sanders had his jersey number retired at Colorado this year, and people are saying it's because of nepotism, because of his father, and it's not. It's because he went 13-12 over his career, and he almost won the Alamo Bowl. Definitely not nepotism, right? All right.
Shane Gillis at the ESPYs. If you see some of the clips, Josh had to find one we felt comfortable using on the air. There are probably more that we could, but there are several that we probably can't or shouldn't. He was great. No doubt about that. I mean, he was pretty great at the ESPYs. He's funny, and he was great. A Shedeur Sanders joke that's pretty tame. Or some that were not so tame. So anyway, I tasked Josh with finding one you could use. How many candidates were there?
Oh, there was like...
He had a lot.
There was a lot that I wanted to use, but you know.
Do you guys ever remember caring about the ESPYs? By the way, good morning. Jeremy and Joe. Joe's off today and tomorrow. Owen's here. Josh is here. Do you remember caring about the ESPYs at any point?
I had to ask my dad last night. What's the ESPYs again? Okay. I don't even remember what the ESPYs are.
I don't know what ESPY stands for.
Well, it's the ESPNs, basically.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
Yeah. It's just,
all right. I didn't know if it had like an if it was like an acronym like ESPN.
Right. Let Grandpa tell you a tale about the ESPYs. The ESPYs used to be a little bit more of a gimmick award show. In that, I mean, I can remember. I'm being 100% serious. I can remember. There was once an ESPY for best performance by an animal at a sporting event. And what might have won is a rabbit running on the field at Notre Dame or something like that.
Oh, so like an unplanned animal like on
yes,
the field.
Yes.
I thought you meant like where that guy like throws the frisbee the full length of a football field and the dog catches it or something.
No, there used to be categories, best performance by an athlete on television. Charles Barkley on SNL. That used to be that, where it was kind of a joke. You'd have player of the year. Then it turned into, let me see if I can find the previous defunct ESPY awards.
They did team of the year last night, which was interesting, but kind of weird who they like put against each other. Like they had the Eagles win it, but they also had as finalists like North Carolina, lacrosse, and all these other teams. It's like, you're competing against an NFL team that won the Super Bowl. How are you going to win Team of the Year? You know, like that one to me just seems kind of weird.
Yeah. There used to be a Showstopper of the Year award where Jim Abbott threw a no-hitter for the Yankees. He was missing a hand. He threw a no-hitter, Showstopper of the Year. I'm trying to find the defunct categories. Outstanding performance by a sports personality in an attempt to break into show business. That was an award. Shaq won that in 1993. Outstanding performance by a sports personality in a commercial. Went to Larry Johnson because of he was his character, Grandma Ma, in old Converse commercials. Outstanding performance by an athlete in entertainment. Charles Barkley, John Kruk, and George Seifert won that. I don't know what George Seifert won it for. In 2001, they awarded most spectacular play. Kind of play of the year. Again, now it's become more of an attempt to be a real sports award where it's after the All-Star game. That's yesterday's the day of the year where none of the four major sports are performing. So, yeah, the ESPYs. It used to be kind of goofier. And now it's, you know, best player, best this, best that. There was a tribute to Lee Corso last night. I don't know if you saw that. That was really cool. They had the USC band come out, play the theme to College Game Day. Corso gave a big speech. So it's had its great moments along the way. Best play. Did they still do best play last night?
That seems like an unavoidable one to give away, right? I don't think you could do a show like that without having a... If they had a best team, they got to have a best play, right?
So the best play last night, you know what won?
Was it Josh and Cooper?
No, it was not.
I would have guessed that.
Was it Saquon jumping over a guy?
It was. It was Barkley jumping over a guy backwards. Pretty good. I mean, it was pretty good.
I don't know. It was the Josh Cooper play, I think, maybe is more impressive just because of the... It's not just one guy jumping over somebody. It's coordination by two parties sort of... Finish it. And did Saquon score on that play?
He did not.
He just jumped over the guy and got tackled right away, right?
You know how you can tell the SBs are not that important? Here's the number one case for why the SBs are not that important. This is unassailable. Josh Allen was nominated for an SB last night and did not win. And Bills fans aren't mad about it, right? There's not an online, how dare you give it to SGA instead of Josh. It was Josh, Saquon, SGA, and Shohei Ohtani.
Athlete of the year.
Best male athlete. That's best male athlete. Josh didn't win an award, and Bills Mafia has not started to riot.
There's not a billboard outside
That's what I mean.
Studio
right Number now. One case that nobody really cared about the ESPYs. You got breakthrough athlete, record-breaking performance, championship performance, best comeback athlete, best play. So the best play was Barkley's hurdle, Tyrese Halliburton in game one of the finals, Trinity Rodman OT gold to send the women to the national to the semifinals in the Olympics, and Sabrina Ionescu logo 3 game winner in WNBA Finals game 3. That was it.
Not even a nomination for the Cooper Josh touchdown.
No.
That feels surprising to me. I don't know. Or even the Kansas City run from Josh, I thought maybe would get a nod there.
It is, I mean, what are you supposed to do with best team? Right. Like best team? The Eagles won best team.
Well, that's what I was saying before. Like, they were going up against the North Carolina women's lacrosse team, like a college team.
Right.
Like, it, I don't think it's very fair to, like, these other teams that are getting put up against them. Like, it's...
I don't know how you pick. I remember one SB for best team that made me mad. They beat out the Panthers, the Dodgers, the Liberty, the Ohio State Buckeyes, Oklahoma City. Like, all right, fine. The Eagles win best team.
Okay.
They weren't even the one seed in their conference.
Right.
Okay. The one that bothered me the most was, and this is so stupid, I can't believe I'm sitting here talking about an ESPY loss, but when the New England Patriots were undefeated and lost in the Super Bowl, I felt like they should have won best team, even though they lost a game,
right?
And they did not win best team because they didn't win the Super Bowl.
And the Eagles won best team probably only because
they won the Super Bowl. Right. Anyway, whatever. The ESPYs.
Ovechkin had a best record-breaking performance because he broke Gretzky's record.
That's pretty good. Who is he up against?
It doesn't say here. Just shows the winner.
I've got that. He's up against Kevin Durant in Olympic basketball, Caitlin Clark, and Gino Auriemma.
Yeah, you're...
I mean, Ovechkin's setting the all-time gold.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, there you go. There's the ESPYs. If you do go and see the Shane Gillis highlights, it's pretty funny. And Corso, and Lee Corso, in terms of people that have been individually responsible for building a sport, College Game Day, of course, has had such an incredible role in building college football, creating atmospheres, going on location. Herb Street and Corso, the pair, you know, whether it's actually being a part of College Game Day, being a part of the video game 25 years ago, they're both a part of that. Not so fast, my friend, is what Corso used to say in the video game. He putting on the head of the mascot, worth a laugh every time he did it, and he's done now. He's finished up that College Game Day. They paid tribute to him last night, and you know, it was a nice moment. Anyway, 803-0550. I'll get into this a little more at the 8 o'clock hour. But I put up a Twitter poll about Von. So Von Miller signs with the Commanders. His time with the Bills, we knew that was going to be done. And Von signs with the Commanders. He's on to another contender. So he goes from the Rams and then joins the Bills for 3 years on a big, huge contract. Huge moment in free agency. Like, Von signed with the Bills. You remember where you were, right? Do you remember where you were when you found out? And it was a big, big deal. And I remember texting Howard in all caps, Von Miller. Like, holy cow. So it ends, and they don't deliver a Super Bowl in Vaughn's time here. You know, we dig into it more in 8 o'clock. The Twitter poll I put up is there a lesson to be learned? Do you feel like the Bills should, looking back, say, you know, that was aggressive. That was a huge commitment to an aging player to try to be the final piece to put us over the line. And it did not ultimately work out. Is there a lesson to be learned? And the Twitter poll I have up on that is, yes, bad gamble should be scared off. They should not do something like that again. Scared off, bad gamble, or worth a try, would do it again. Would sign the biggest free agent to try and be the piece that gets you over the finish line. And I'm happy to report that 3/4 of the votes are, that was worth a try. I agree with that. I think it was definitely worth the try. If you could go back and undo it, and I gave you $120 million to spend somewhere else on a 6-year deal, you might be able to find it. But I feel like it was worth the try, and I hope they're not scared off by it. I think that's the game they should be in. That's the poker table they should be at, is the high stakes table. Don't be afraid. Push them in. Lose. You know. Don't be scared off by that. And the way that they've built their roster to this point, I don't think it indicates they are scared off by it. But you could make the case that they shouldn't do it again and they should have this kind of build instead. You know, the Diggs kind of idea, Diggs gets all the attention because, oh, wide receiver one, nobody that's above the team, no star, it's okay for everybody eats. Vaughn, I mean, it's not exactly the same because of the position. But Vaughn was, oh, yeah, if this player becomes available, you make room and you fit him in because he's so good. And when he started out, he was that good. Injury happens. I don't know if you'd say it was because of age, but it was a big, big commitment to an aging player. Is an injury more likely at that age? Is recovery tougher? I think you'd make a case for that. He had already torn his ACL once before in his career, a second tear. You know, once a guy gets hurt, maybe it never comes back the same way, especially a second time. Tre'Davious White, the Bills, of course, go with the ACL, then the Achilles, and then it's kind of over for Trey White. Now he's back, and I don't know that Bills fans have much faith in him just because injuries took him down. But he's back. So maybe we'll dig that a little more at 8 o'clock. 803-0550. Do you have a thought on that? Is there any sort of look back, an obituary on Vaughn's time here? And whether or not that was a worthy gamble, I think it was. And I'd like to see them do it again, whenever that comes up. 803-0550 on WGR. Hey, everybody. Jeremy and Joe. Joe's off today and tomorrow. Chris Trapasso is going to join us tomorrow. I have him in from 8 to 10. Watching the Open Championship, Scotty Scheffler, 2-under through 8. He's the favorite, so it's not exactly like, hey, look at me, but Scheffler to win. Westwood always finishes in the top 10 at the Open Championship. He is 3-under through 15, and the leader is Jacob Skov-Olesen, who is in with a -4 opening round. 803-0550, our phone number if you want to join, 1-888-550-2550. We are closing in on training camp. Next week, we'll be there on the 23rd. Getting ready. Ja'Marr Chase has predicted he or Justin Jefferson will be the first 2,000-yard receiver. You know, Calvin Johnson missed it by not that much. We saw Tyreek Hill gunning for it. The Bengals' defense is bad again. Chase has a look at it. 2,000-yard receiver. 17th game added, of course. I think we could see a 2,000-yard receiver. If it's Chase, if it's Jefferson, who else could be in this mix? Who's got a terrible defense this year but a good offense? I don't know if Atlanta fits that bill. I don't know that, you know, Drake London's quite good enough to do that, but we'll see. I saw the Locked On NFL Top 100. It's ranking season, so Locked On NFL. Might not surprise you to find out the Bills had 2 players in the Top 100. It was Josh and Benford. No love for Dawkins or Spencer Brown. Dawkins got to be in the top 100. Like, I think it's nuts. There was only one problem I had with the Locked On NFL top 100, and that was that Travis Hunter made the list. I feel like rookies should not make it. I'm not disputing he could be, but you can't be one of the NFL's top 100 players before you play a down. Is that wrong?
Travis Hunter made it?
Travis Hunter made the NFL's
top. And Dawkins didn't?
Right.
That seems crazy.
It seems nuts. Yes. That a rookie would make it. You haven't played yet.
I
think he will be great.
Wow.
But
I think he's going to be awesome, but
yeah.
He hasn't been awesome yet.
I drafted him second in a dynasty draft, second overall, because I just kind of want to have the Travis Hunter experience.
Right.
Might not be the best pick, but we'll find out. But yeah, Dawkins did not make it.
That seems really surprising to me.
It's not surprising to me to see like the Bills only get two or three names leading the way. The Eagles, the Ravens, the Lions, they consistently have more players thought of near the top. But anyway, 803-0550, we'll get a break in. On that Vaughn question, you know, are you feeling an itch for Bean to swing at some point, whether it's the deadline this year? I've got a couple names of the next Vaughn discussion that, well, it's kind of ripped in today's headlines, and the next couple weeks, we'll see how that goes. But edge rushers getting paid. There's a couple that want to get paid. Maybe we have future Von Miller hits the market scenarios, and would you want the Bills active again, given how it went this time? 803-0550 is our number here on WGR.